This is Talk to Me, the official podcast of MetalNexus.net. Your host, Joshua Toomey, bring you epic rants, anecdotes, and interviews with heavy hitters from hardcore
for new life begins!
To hair metal. This is Talk to Me.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Talk to Me, the official podcast of MetalNexus.net. This is episode 145. The special guest this week is Frank Fonseca of Fozzy and also Stuck Mojo. And we've also got a special guest host this week, and that's John from John's Untitled Podcast. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you doing?
Oh, you know, hanging out, living the dream.
So
got a packed episode here, and let's get into some stuff. But first, I want to talk about Buckle Up for Chi. I talked about them on the last episode with Jeff from Willhaven, and brought them up, and the PRP kind of quoted the episode, and also talked about Buckle Up for Chi in their article. So they reached out to me, you know, saying thank you for talking about us on your podcast, and they wanted to send a care package, and I got the care package actually today, and it was a big package full of cool stuff, man. Are you familiar with Buckle Up for Chi, John?
I am. Actually, when we both had Jared Montague from Taproot on, we talked a little bit about Buckle Up for Chi, and they were doing stuff for his book pre-order, and what did come in that package, though? Because I've never really seen what comes in what they give you.
It was a nice tote bag, a big handful of stickers, wristbands, or some bracelets, things like that. And they also sent this little note here, so I'll go ahead and read it. Buckle Up for Chi was established in an effort to honor the memory of the late Chi Chang of Deftones, an amazing man whose life was tragically changed after he was involved in a car accident in which he was not wearing his seatbelt. This campaign serves as a tribute not only to the legacy he left behind, but also the lives that will be saved because of the seatbelt awareness. And then they've got their links here, buckleupforchi.com. Twitter is at buckleupforchi. Facebook is buckleupforchi, and Instagram also buckleupforchi. Make sure and check out all those different handles on Facebook, Twitter, and their actual website there. But yeah, Buckle Up for Chi is a cool thing, because that's the one thing they always said about Chi is, had he been wearing his seatbelt, he probably would have lived. And unfortunately, he did not have his seatbelt on that night when they had the car accident.
You know, what's interesting is I would assume, you know, with us being roughly the same age, that you probably went to that demonstration around prom, the drinking and driving thing demonstration.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about.
But what's interesting to me is, I feel like, you know, and kudos to Buckle Up for Chi, is I feel like this movement has raised more awareness for like wearing your seatbelt than that demonstration ever did for anybody, really.
Well, I think around prom time, I wasn't thinking about wearing my seatbelt. I was probably more thinking about how I was going to get the prom date away from prom.
I never went to prom. So.
Yeah, I didn't either. Actually, I didn't either. I did all the after prom. They did a whole bunch of after prom activities where you bought like a ticket and you could go like do some bowling and like the movies, I think, was available. It was all this stuff to like basically keep you away from going to a hotel with a case of beer and your lady. It was, you know, all these fun activities you could do. I think that's what the girlfriend and I did at that time.
I think it's interesting because like you were saying in the PRP article and so forth, and our talks with Jared from Taproot, you know, Buckle Up for Chi, I think, has just raised a lot more awareness than anything else has for wearing, you know, seatbelts and what it has done, because everyone has heard about that and what it did and how preventable it really was. And I think between a lot of the people that you and I have had on that have had the chance to meet Chi, everyone said what a great person he is. So I think it just reaches and touches a lot more people than, you know, an after school or a school special of like wearing your seatbelt before you go to prom.
Right. Yeah. And Chi was a great dude, man. I met him a couple of times throughout the years. Definitely kind of, I can reiterate what Jeff was saying. You know, Chino and those guys were like maybe a little bit more accessible, and Chi was always kind of there, but he never really was outgoing and everything. So you if you met him, you knew he was like a spirit on earth, as Jeff said, an angel on the earth or whatever. But he definitely wasn't the hanging out partying type. But yeah, he was definitely a great guy.
really cool. I wish, actually, I would just love to meet anyone from Deftones, really. I think they're obviously a monumental band that was big in not only the nu metal scene, but then transcended that scene as a whole and were able to reach a wider array of fans. So, I mean, anyone who's gotten a chance to meet the Deftones individually, I've always been really, I think they're almost at that level now of being Pantera-esque. If you've met anyone from Pantera, you know, like that's some shit. Like you have like a part of rock lineage, and mm-hmm. I think the Deftones are a part of that now.
If you need to, you can call my mom. She met Chino.
Yeah, you sent me that photo when Ellen and I were doing that. Yeah.
Great photo of like it was myself, my old drummer Richie, and my mom and Chino standing there talking. So yeah, it was always great.
What does one's mom talk to Chino Marino of the Deftones about?
I don't remember what she talked to them about, but she also came down and met Korn at a different time. And Jonathan Davis had some glasses on that didn't have any lenses in it, and so I think she was kind of giving him some shit about not having lenses in his glasses. Like they were just regular eyeglasses, but with no lenses in it. And you know, she was giving him shit about that. So yeah, mom was cool, man. She saw, unlike a lot of people, my mom saw Korn on their first tour.
What did she think of them?
I think she liked them. It was really weird, man. Growing up, my mom, she was way like into rock. Like both my parents were. I kind of actually was kind of rebelled against them when they were buying Motley Crue albums and things like that. I was like, no, man, Jerry Lee Lewis is where it's at. And then later on, you know, I graduated to heavier stuff. And then I also noticed that my dad was more into classic rock, but mom kind of, you know, kept up with the times. I remember she had Extremes, Porno Graffiti for, you know, and stuff like that with More Than Words on it. I'm sure you love that song. And
I do.
And you know, I remember her buying Motley Crue cassettes and stuff like that. So yeah, she was always into the heavier stuff.
So your mom used to be like, you're such a poser. That band was cooler on their first record.
Right. Yeah. When the Korn took over TRL, she was like, oh, they've sold out. But it also it looks like Deftones are actually in the studio or us possibly putting out some new music. So that's always exciting.
I mean, they're due. At this point, they've been touring Gore for like, what, 2 years now? And honestly, it wasn't very well received. So it really is time to put out a new record.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny. You know, I saw them at Riot Fest along with, you know, Rob Zombie and the Misfits and all that stuff, and even Glassjaw. Of all those bands, it's like, oh yeah, Deftones were there. It was never like, dude, the Deftones put on an amazing show tonight. They were just kind of like, oh yeah, I saw them too. Maybe their performance that day didn't take over the festival. You know, that was a crazy day though. I mean, that was like, you know, Misfits and Motion City Soundtrack played their final show, or their second to last final show. They did end up playing one more club show after that. But yeah, it was is my wife's favorite band. So it was very emotional watching Motion City Soundtrack play and their, you know, one of their final shows.
Because that's kind of my wheelhouse, is that early like 2000s like screamo emo scene. Were you big into that? Like, I don't think I've really heard you talk about many bands in that genre outside of like the Used or the Year.
I totally got into all that stuff. I got into you know, like, I think My Chemical Romance is probably top five favorite bands. I got into a ton of that stuff. I remember going to see the Used like kind of when they first started popping up, and then getting into like even the, like some of the weirder stuff like Aiden and all those like bands. And you know, so it was definitely you know, you had to hide the mascara from me for a little while there.
I'm sure your wife loved it back then. I dude who knows how to do his own makeup, like, I love it.
Eyeliner. You know, it's funny, the first time I ever wore eyeliner was in Primer 55. And there you go, Mike G. There's another Primer 55 reference. But we got out to L.A., and we were like maybe two tour dates before L.A., and they were finally like, you know, all right, you're in this band, and now you need to start looking like a rock star kind of thing, and sat me down, and I think we were in like El Paso, Texas, and like some janky Motel 6. We stayed in Motel 6s all across the country that year, but whatever. So I put it on, and like, there, it was funny because they we're like, you need to do this, and it's for stage, and it looks cool, and chicks will dig it, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, all right, fine, whatever. Give me the damn eyeliner. And I start putting it on. They're like, and then they start giving me shit about it. They're like, oh, what would your dad think about you now if they saw you? And like, they like peer pressured me into the eyeliner, and then they start giving me shit about wearing the eyeliner. But what that leads us to is we got to LA, and the Metal Edge people were there, like Paul, the main editor of Metal Edge, which is, you know, something I grew up reading. And I would go to Kroger and sit in the aisle and read, you know, magazines because I couldn't afford them. So I would sit there and read. And then finally, like, dude is at our show. And they're like, oh, yeah, we're doing a photo shoot for Metal Edge magazine. I'm like, wow, this is amazing. And those photos never actually came to life, but they did review our show. Paul from Metal Edge reviewed our show, and I still have the page from Metal Edge, you know, talking about the, you know, it was a decent review or whatever of the live show. And all these time I'm like, man, I wonder whatever happened to those photos. And then it finally hit me. I was like, why don't you look at the fucking at the review and see if the photographer is credited, which she was. And then it took me 2 seconds on Facebook to find her. So I reached out and I was like, hey, you did a photo shoot for Primer 55 in 2002. Do you remember that? And she was like, oh my God, that was a good photo shoot. You guys look super metal. And like, she remembered exactly where we were and everything about it. So she's actually going through and looking into her filing cabinets and seeing if she has those photos. And she's going to send me some, once they come to light. So it's going to be kind of cool to see what 23-year-old me looked like in what could have been in Metal Edge magazine.
Do you feel like something I've always wondered too, with you being in Primer at, you know, an interesting age in your early 20s and potentially there being a lot of photos of you, is it interesting to have people either send you photos of when you were on tour that they took, or, you know, in this situation, you're like, you're just saying, of being in a publication, photos that never got released that you've never seen? Is it kind of cool to like have that, like still be a part of a time period that like you remember, but there's part like visuals that you've never seen all these years later?
Oh yeah. I mean, that's the one thing that's been nice about the show is people reaching out and being like, hey, I met you and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, cool. And then that one guy was like, oh, I've got pictures of me and you from that tour. And I'm like, you know, I was like, prove it. And the guy, like, you know, an hour or two later, sent a couple of photos of me and him, and they're like me, like signing an autograph and stuff. So that's cool. And then the guy Sean Reinert, who basically runs Nonpoint's fan group, and he's a big proponent of Nonpoint. He, I guess, I met him also on that tour, and so he sent me a photo of me and him from that tour. So yeah, I'm starting to see some of those photos come to life. Some people sent me some photos of some of the stuff that I autographed for them back in the day and stuff. So yeah, it's kind of crazy seeing that stuff come back around, because it's not like, you know, you went to the show yesterday and took it with your camera phone and it's up on Facebook. It's like, these are actually like in someone's, you know, photo book at home, and they got to pull it out and scan it and all this other nonsense. So yeah, it's cool that stuff's out there. And so, I'm looking forward to seeing these photos if they come to life. And she said they were like in a filing cabinet that's behind some stuff. So it's going to take a while, but yeah, if they come to light, then it'll be a fun story. I'll have to get her on, and then we'll do a big reveal or something.
Something I saw that I've been wondering about, I was going to ask you about, is Rockin' Pod. I saw that you are gearing up to do Rockin' Pod 2. So that's going to be a thing this year. It made it to year two.
Yeah, year two is year two struggling along. There, I think the luster of year one's kind of wore off, and that's the donations for Rockin' Pod 2 are coming along slower. So we definitely need to get everyone out there and donating. And if you're planning on attending Rockin' Pod 2 in Nashville, Tennessee, August 25th, make sure to go ahead and go over to the GoFundMe page, and go ahead and start pouring a little bit of money into it, because, you know, they got to get everyone's flights booked and hotels booked and the venue booked, and it's at a bigger place this year. Should have table space for everybody this year. You know, why aren't you coming down? Why you need to come down to this?
You are my source for this thing. So typically when you start talking about it, like, because when you were talking about it last year, it was almost like it wasn't so much of when it's happening, it was like, well, it's happening in a couple of weeks and I'm really excited. And I was like, oh fuck. I thought it was just, it was going from like, not a pipe dream, but like a thing that was being discussed to all of a sudden, like the next time you talked about it, it was like, it's happening and it's happening now. And I'm leaving in like 3 weeks. And it's like, oh, I guess I missed my window. Well, yeah. I mean, we all heard your podcast that you did, and some of the other ones from, the podcast that, you know, happened while there at the Rockin' Pod. But I mean, kind of in a not podcast centric way, what was it like maybe as a spectator, like that would entice people to go? Like what would entice people to come out to see it? Like what was it like from that perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a spectator going into it, and what I would like about it is the fact that you're going in, there's live shows, like some of your favorite podcasts will be doing live shows, like Rock and Metal Combat did a live show, and Decibel Geek did a live show with, you know, with actual live guests on. And then I, you know, sat there at my booth, and I, you know, that's where I got my Toby Wright interview, and Steve from Skin Lab came back on, and then Kenny Olson, formerly Kid Rock's band, was there. And so, I mean, and all those people were walking around just mingling with everybody. Like, there were set autograph times if you want to get some stuff signed, but for the most part, like, those people were walking around. I mean, you know, a lot of the dudes like Gunnar Nelson were there, and Mark Slaughter were there, and you know, like I said, Toby Wright, Michael Wagner, and there was a ton of music people if you were there to, you know, meet some people, get some cool stories. What's his name, Gary Corbett, who played keyboards for Kiss, and Cinderella was there. So I mean, there's a lot of that style of bands, but I mean, like I said, the Dead by Wednesday guys were there. You know, Steve from Skin Lab was on tour with Dead by Wednesday at the time, so it was great to see him kind of out of nowhere, out of the blue, and sit down and talk with him. And you know, you can go booth to booth and, you know, meet your favorite podcasters, and then at the same time kind of see them, how they work. You know, not a lot of people get to see, you know, basically what you're seeing right now, because we're, you know, we're Skyping or whatever, but, you know, not a lot of people get to see, you know, my dumb face talking into a microphone. But, you know, if you want to go to the Rock and Pod Expo, you know, you get to see Cobras on Fire and Decibel Geek. And last year was Talking Metal, and those guys were there. And I think Discography Discussion just got announced that they're going to be there. So a lot of great shows are going to be there. And basically, if you want to see how the sausage is made, come down to the Rock and Pod Expo, meet some rock stars, see some podcasts, get some cool, you know, everybody's got promotional stuff too. So, you know, you'll walk out of there with a handful of stuff and a lot of good memories.
Are you going to partake in the All-Star Jam this year? Maybe Podterra, if you can get everyone there and make their live debut.
The Podterra live debut. That'd be awesome. But actually, I guess Eric from Shoot the Shred podcast, I think he shut his podcast down. And then I would love to see Trav come down. That would be great. But you know, American Standards, they you know, they know how to pimp themselves on everyone's podcast. So yeah, it would be cool to get a Podterra together, but we'll see what happens. And on a side note there too, if you want to do like John's doing, come on and co-host the podcast, you can head over to rockandpodexpo.com and sign up, and for $50, come on and co-host the Talk to Me podcast. That gives you that's also admission, early admission, co-host the show and all that included. So a couple of those packages are available over there. And also, if you want to go over and co-host Cobras and Fire, Decibel Geek, all those podcasts, whatever your favorite podcast is, there's a tier where you can co-host their shows and go on and become podcast famous.
If you could go on to anyone else's podcast and do a co-host, who would it be?
You know who I'd love to talk to and sit down and be one-on-one with? It would be Kevin Smith. I would love to sit down.
Oh, my God, that'd be great.
That dude is like one of the most amazing talkers ever made. And it's funny because, you know, he basically is known for Silent Bob. But if you listen to anything he does podcast-wise, you can just say like, you know, hey, Kevin, how's your day going? And 30 minutes later, you get your next question in.
Well, I was going to say, it was on the evening with, or Too Fat for 40. He literally answered one question. Yeah. And like, that was 2 hours. And then like the bonus scenes were the rest of the questions getting answered to him, asked to him.
Yeah.
And it's like, go ahead.
You know, with his health scare, I've kind of, you know, delved back into, you know, his stuff and started listening to more of his podcasts again. And I was even listening to one today, and you know, he talks, they were talking for like 30 or 40 minutes before they're like, all right, well, let's start the show. And, you know, like,
yeah,
you're like, dude, man.
What's interesting to me about Kevin Smith, and I think for you and I both being very big Kevin Smith fans, is the fact that you can hear the same story being told across a lot of different podcasts he does or a lot of different mediums that he's involved in. But it never gets old because those stories are so uniquely him, but they're very humanizing. Mm-hmm. Like, it just sounds like the everyday person telling these stories. You're like, that could be me. And that's what I love. That, to me, that's what I love about Kevin Smith. And I think why he's had such a long career in everything he does, because like everything seems like it's just all out of fun and like you could be doing any of the things he's done.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. He's definitely got a lust for life that not a lot of people have. And, you know, you could tell he's just a great storyteller. He can just sit there and just talk and talk and talk. And you know, as well as I do, that being able to talk constantly for minutes on end is a skill that that I've yet to master. You know, there's days where I'm doing this intro by myself and to where I think I've been talking for 45 minutes. And I look down and it's been three, you know, it's not easy to sit and talk to yourself and to get everything across like he does. It's an amazing skill to have. Have you checked out Good Company with Bowling yet? Have you checked out any of the Scott Bowling stuff?
I have not. I've been hearing you pump it for the last couple of weeks. Why don't you tell me a little bit more about it?
Scott Bowling, good friend of the show over there, he's doing a great YouTube show, interview show. Yeah, you can check out all the good stuff over there at scottsgoodcompany.com. Awesome interviews with like Corey Lowry of Stuck Mojo fame, which is, you know, kind of ties in with this week's guest, Frank Fonseray. Head from Corn was on there. Dude, that video's almost got like 100,000 views. That's insanity how many views that thing has got. Clint Lowry of Seven Dust, LaJean Witherspoon of Seven Dust, Elias of Nonpoint, which we'll get into in a minute, with Robert Vera's pick from the kit. And man, it's just high quality stuff. Actually, the dude Nathan that did the Judas video and then the what's the latest
Painless
video? Painless video. He's actually Scott's video guy now. So if you watch the Corey Lowry video, that thing looks like pro shot, studio shot stuff. So some good stuff, man. So make sure you guys are going over and checking out Good Company with Bowling, our good friend Scott Bowling, and tell him Toomey sent you.
Was that shot at the DDP yoga place?
It's actually shot in Scott's house.
Okay.
Scott's got like the super uber man cave, and if you check it out though, I mean it's worth just going to look at his man cave alone. You're like, Jesus Christ, it's too much awesome stuff. He wants me to come down this summer. I'm going to try to make it down this summer and check out his pad. He's down in Atlanta, so it's not too far of a drive. But yeah, maybe Scott can come up to Rockin' Pod and bring all of his gear up there for a great thing. And then so before we get into our conversation with Frank Fonseray of Fozzy / Stuck Mojo, we need to get into Rob Rivera's pick from the kit. So let's do that and then talk to Frank, and then John and I will be back momentarily.
What's up, everybody? This is Rob Rivera from the band Nonpoint, and this is Rob's pick from the kit. Before I get to my pick, I just want to let you all know that on April 25th, we start our Kings and Queens tour with Butcher Babies, Kane Hill, and Sumo Psycho. You can visit nonpoint.com and get all the details for tour dates and tickets. And also, you can get to nonpointstore.com and get our ex-listening party VIP, which enables you to listen to our new record while hanging out with us. You get a t-shirt of choice, a poster, you get pictures with the band, and you get a free download of the album when it comes out this summer. So nonpointstore.com, get those VIPs because they're going away fast. My pick from the kit is from today's guest, Frank, from Fozzy and Stuck Mojo fame. The song Here Comes the Monster is on the second Stuck Mojo album called Pig Walk. Very underrated drummer. Do not understand how this guy is not more talked about within drummers. You know, when people talk about good drummers, you hear the same, you know, usual suspects. And this guy is just one of the most solid, groove-oriented drummers that I have ever heard. I've had a chance to tour with him and Fozzy, and watched him every night, and it's just a pleasure and just how solid and consistent this guy is. I just wish the guy would get more love. How is he does not get recommended for more gigs or any of that stuff just really blows my mind. I mean, the guy is just an incredible, incredible talent. And definitely, if you ever want to listen to a drummer and you want to learn grooves and timing, definitely watch that guy. I do not remember him playing with In-Ears or a click track. I'm not very sure if he did or didn't. But he was just solid and really cool guy too, man. I got to hang out with him quite a bit. And just heard some really cool stories, you know, from them from the road and whatnot. But yeah, Frank is just a beast of a drummer. So any new drummers who want to listen to some really tasty grooves, check this guy out. This is Stuck Mojo with Here Comes the Monster.
All right, guys, we got Frank Fonseret of Fozzy on the line, man. Frank, how are you doing today?
I'm very well. How you doing?
Oh, man, it's great to talk to you, man. I'm living the dream here.
Oh, thanks, man. I'm glad your podcast is doing well.
Yeah, well, speaking of doing well, I mean, you are on fire right now. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's a weird experience. Things are going really well for us. you know, the new album has done really well. Judas was the biggest single of our career by far. Mm-hmm. You know, it's done over 16 million views on YouTube in less than a year, which is just, you know, crazy. Nobody in our camp would have ever guessed that, you know, in a million years that would happen. And now the next single, Painless, is done. It's closing in on 2 million. And, you know, a lot of streams for the album.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the our attendance at shows is going up. I mean, it's really gratifying after a long time of working on it, you know.
I think you've answered about five of my questions in there, but I mean, what's the overall Judas effect on the band? I mean, how drastic have the attendance to shows been up?
Well, I mean, we've probably, our average attendance at shows has probably doubled. You know, we didn't always have the strongest following in the U.S. for whatever reason. And, you know, this tour we're on now, we're I don't know what we're averaging, but it's not unusual for us to do, you know, 400 people at a show, which it doesn't make us an arena band by any stretch. But we've never pulled those kind of numbers before. And mm-hmm. I think it's obviously because of Judas. Judas has gotten us way more exposure than anything else ever has. And I think it's because people are starting to see it. It's like, oh, these guys are actually, you know, these guys are for real. A lot of people have told me that they heard Judas on the radio and went, man, that's a great song. Who was that? And they were shocked when they found out it was Fozzy.
Right. They're like,
you know, oh, I thought that was just some, you know, guy's vanity project, and we've never been that.
Have you noticed the difference in people coming out to the shows, to where maybe early Fozzy dates would be more Jericho fans of, you know, the wrestling Jericho, to where now, like, people are truly coming out for the songs and the music?
Totally, absolutely. You know, when we first started, there was a large curiosity factor about us. So we did some big numbers in the very beginning of our career. But it was obvious that those were people who were just curious to see their favorite wrestler, you know, get on stage and sing. And nowadays, I mean, I can look out in the audience and I see people singing the songs, and not just Judas. You know, Judas has caused people to go back and research us and look at our past videos and our past catalog. And I see people singing a lot of the songs, which is a great feeling, you know.
Yeah.
Let's not be naive. There's still people who come out to right. see, you know, to see Chris because they're fans of him as a wrestler. And it's funny because, you know, you're playing a show with a lot of wrestling fans when they chant Y2J.
Right.
You know? And, but usually by the end of the show, they're chanting Fozzy, which is like, okay, you know, we've converted them, you know.
How grateful are you to have the success, you know, so far into your career, I guess is the question.
Oh, I mean, I couldn't be more grateful that things are going as well as they are, especially at this point, at this stage of my career, because I can appreciate it now, you know. When you're young and things are going well, you seem to have this sense of, well, of course they're going well, you know, it's like they're supposed to go well. And I think that's just true of, you know, life in general. When you're a little younger, you don't have a sense of your own mortality. You don't have a real sense of what the real world is like, that most people, the vast majority of people, struggle their way through life, mm-hmm. you know, and don't exactly, you know, most people's dreams don't come true. You know what I mean? Most people have normal lives and they have jobs and they work hard and they struggle to make, you know, ends meet. And if they're lucky, you know, they get their 2 weeks of vacation a year. They get to have some, just moments of pleasure in a sea of just struggling to get by, you know. And you don't really realize that when you're young, especially if you're in the entertainment business and things are going well for you when you're in your 20s, it just seems like, well, yeah, that's the way it's supposed to be. You pursue something and it goes great. You know, it's like, but when you're a little bit older and you've been in the business a long time and you've had your ups and downs and you've definitely had those times where you question whether you even wanted to continue on mm-hmm. because it didn't look like anything was ever going to shake loose and happen for you. When things start to turn and some success starts to come your way, you appreciate it so much more, you know?
Yeah.
And you realize how valuable it is. And, you know, anytime when you're on the road and you have the urge to complain about any one little thing, you know, about, oh, the, you know, the air conditioning on the bus doesn't work or something like that, you know, you can start to realize it's like, yeah, the air conditioning on the tour bus that I'm on doesn't work.
Right.
You know, that the tour bus that carries me in comfort from show to show, you know, most people don't even dare to dream about getting on stage and performing in front of an audience at all, you know, and I'm getting to not only do it, but do it on a regular basis and get paid to do it and pay my bills by doing it. You know, little things like, oh, you know, we're not getting any catering on this show. They come into perspective, you know, you start to realize that, hey, I'm lucky to be doing this at all.
Well, I think it's with anything, you know, you become a creature of habit. And if anything kind of gets out of that norm, you know, no matter, you could have $1 million in the bank and still be, you know, pissy about certain things. So yeah, it's all about perspective, man.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, you know, everybody has, like you said, it doesn't matter what your financial situation is. It doesn't matter, you know, how good you may have it or what have you. Everybody, it's a normal human reaction to notice when things aren't going the way you want them to.
Right.
When things go wrong, when things go awry, even if it's in the smallest way, you know, you notice them. It's how you deal with them and how you look at them in the big scheme of things, you know, that, you know, determines, you know, whether you have character or not. You know, it's like into every life, a little rain must fall, you know, but it's like how you deal with it and the perspective you put it in. And it's like, well, it's, you know, it's rain. I'll get a little wet. Big deal. Everything else in my life is going great. You know, or there's the person who everybody knows or can conceive of, that person who seems to have everything. And when any little problem happens, they think it's the end of the world. You know, it's just, it's all how you look at things.
Absolutely. Back to Judas, you mm-hmm. guys, you know, you guys had Lights Go Out. I thought it was a great song. Could have been a huge hit. You had Sandpaper, which had, you know, M Shadows of Avenged Sevenfold on it. You know, a couple of tunes that I thought, you know, could have hit, but, you know, Judas kind of came out of nowhere and took off. I mean, I know you said that you guys didn't expect it to take off, but I mean, was there, like, what was the inkling that this song was going to be the one?
Well, I don't think there was an inkling that this song was going to be the one. It was a matter of, we're doing an album and we're on a record label and they want to release a single. And, the label had an idea of what song they wanted to release. But Chris, to his credit, he realized he just had the intuition that Judas is the first single. This is like the song of the record. This is needs to be our first step forward with this record. And there were people who didn't quite agree. No, they thought other songs should be the first single. And he really he was pretty insistent about it. And was able to, you know, was able to get his way. And I'm glad he did, because it was definitely the right move. I think it was the perfect combination of being a heavy enough song to, you know, to appeal to that listener base, you know, the active rock listener mm-hmm. base. But it's had some crossover appeal as well, because it's got, you know, it's got a strong melody and it's a heavy song, but it doesn't just appeal to headbangers. You know what I mean? It's a good kind of middle of the road. And yeah, he had an instinct and it turned out to be right.
And this is the most success you've had. Was Stuck Mojo ever at this level of, you know, of draw and whatnot?
Well, I mean, it was different in that, first of all, it was a completely different time. And, you know, the business was not like what it is now. Stuck Mojo never had really any radio play to speak of at all. It was pretty rare that we got played on the radio at all. And so we never had a song get this much attention by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, Judas was a top five hit song. We didn't have anything even remotely like that. But we definitely had success as far as our draw. You know, we did big numbers at a lot of our shows. I mean, we had a lot of shows that, you know, didn't do that great either.
Yeah.
But you know, when we played at home, we sold out the Masquerade here at home, which was on paper was an 800 seat venue, but you know, routinely we put over 1,000 people in there, sometimes upwards of 1,200 or 1,300 people. You know, and we had a lot of markets where we did really, really strong numbers like that. And that just came from touring constantly, you know, yeah. I mean, and, you know, Fozzy isn't a band that tours constantly. I mean, we're touring, we're busy right now. And, but we've had periods of time where we were off the road because, you know, we were, you know, everybody was pursuing other things. Whereas it wasn't like that in Stuck Mojo. I mean, we lived on the road, we lived in a van. So we, our numbers were always, as far as live shows, were always stronger. But then again, like I said, it was a different time and everybody's numbers were stronger back then. You know, I mean, live music, particularly rock, is struggling somewhat now. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the mid to late 90s, a lot more people in general were going to shows. So it's kind of hard to compare one or the other. There's a lot of ways in which Fozzy is a more successful band. There's some ways in which Stuck Mojo was a more successful band. It just depends on what metric you want to judge it by. But I would say, as far as like attention from the media, you know, Fozzy has done more because we just have a little bit more, you know, I think we have something more of notoriety because of who Chris is. And so we get more attention from more kind of mainstream media outlets than Stuck Mojo ever did. So it's just, it's kind of apples and oranges.
Are you seeing anything like people coming up to you saying that they're Stuck Mojo fans, or people coming to the meet and greets with Stuck Mojo stuff for you and Rich to sign?
Oh yeah. Yeah. All the time. We always get that, at least to some degree, you know. I mean, pretty much every signing we ever do, there's at least one person who wants, you know, a Stuck Mojo CD cover signed, or signed, or has a Stuck Mojo t-shirt, or even just says, "Hey man, you know, I loved Stuck Mojo." So yeah, I mean, people definitely remember, you know, and it's just nice to know we had that kind of impact even, you know, this far along since the band really kind of broke up, you know. The original kind of Stuck Mojo that everybody remembers really kind of, you know, went on hiatus 18 years ago. And we've had different levels of activity ever since, but nothing ever even close to, you know, the kind of activity level we had back then. And people still remember, which is really gratifying.
Yeah, it's funny when people talk about, you know, this show is kind of based in that new metal era. And a lot of people talk about the early days and, you know, bands that influence the scene and stuff. And a lot of the times you'll get, you know, Stuck Mojo's name comes up all the time. And, and you know, people looking, you know, in the rearview mirror always tend to, you know, bring up Stuck Mojo as like one of the originals.
Yeah. And I said, it really makes me happy that we were able to have that kind of impact on people. You know, I've had people tell me, you know, what we did means to them. You know, whenever somebody tells you that, like, what you did, it has meaning for them, not just, "Man, you guys kicked ass," but, "Man, what you guys did really meant something to me." Our sound man, who's touring with us right now, a guy named Sam Abernathy, who's our front of house engineer for Fozzy. He was a big Stuck Mojo fan when he was growing up. He's younger than we are. And, you know, he tells us all these experiences about coming to see us play, you know, and we'll look at old videos and he's like, "Yeah, I was in the crowd when you guys did that show, man. Awesome. I was a, you know, Stuck Mojo Atlanta kid, you know, and now I'm getting to mix you guys and it's awesome." And so it's, you know, it's nice to have, you know, been able to make an impact like that, especially because we were just a bunch of nobodies, you know. We were just a bunch of guys who, you know, just tried to play as hard as we could and work as hard as we could and, you know, be entertaining. And to know that we had at least something of an impact, especially when you realize just how big and complicated the music business is and how many people pick up a guitar or pick up a pair of sticks with dreams to make something out of themselves. And, you know, just how difficult that is to do, to get noticed, you know, to know that there's people around the world who we've, you know, had an impact on. It's crazy when you really think about it.
Oh yeah. One of the guys that, contributes to the podcast now is Rob Rivera from Nonpoint. He does a weekly pick from the kit. He picks a song a week. And okay. And when I told him that I had played with you for a minute, like, I think his view of me changed, you know, because of how much he loves your drumming. And it was funny. He was like, wow, you got to play with Frank. That's amazing. Like, and yeah, so yeah, your drumming, you know, put a stamp on a lot of people.
Oh, thanks. Well, first of all, tell Rob I said hi. We did a tour with them recently, and he's a super nice guy. I really like him a lot. He's a really great guy and a great drummer. And so tell him I said thank you. And and now I just lost my train of thought. What was the question again?
I think we were just having a conversation. I was know, basically saying that your stamp, you know, your drumming style, you know, stamped a lot of people in this you know, industry.
Well, thanks. I hope so. I always just tried to be, you know, my main thing was just trying to be solid. You know, I've never been a fancy player, even though I've tried to at times. I mean, I'm a sucker for the guys with the amazing technique, just like anybody is. You know, any drummer knows the guys out there, the Thomas Langs or the Dave Weckles or the people like that who can just, you know, just have this extraordinary technique and just do things that are superhuman on the drums, you know. And I think every drummer to some degree listens to that and wishes they could be that guy. But you know, and I do too, to some degree, but I also realize that, you know, to be a player in a band, the best thing to be is to be somebody that can be relied on to make the music feel good. And that doesn't require, you know, having tons of fancy chops. That requires, you know, having feel and being solid. You know, that's the one thing that whenever I talk to people, if they're complimentary about my playing, they always say, you're so solid. And I'm like, I'll take that all day long.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing worse than a drummer who isn't solid, you know? So if the best thing you could say about me is like, wow, you're really solid, then that's great. I take that as a compliment.
Yeah. I mean, the time that, you know, you've played with Primary 55 for that one tour, and we get down to we got down to Florida for the rehearsals, and I'm a stickler for drumming, and I'm like, oh god, here we go again, here's another drummer, you know, because I was nervous. We didn't have like a, you know, like Preston or somebody from back in the day in the band, and I didn't know a whole lot about you, even though I'd actually played with you a couple of times and listened to Mojo, but you never know what you're gonna get, kind of thing, when you walk into that situation.
And yeah, you never really know from listening to something somebody's recorded what kind of a player they are, because God knows what goes on in the studio.
So we get in the rehearsal studio. I think one song in, I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I'm fine.
Well, hey, and coming from a bass player, thank you, because that's, you know, that's the bread and butter of every rock band is the rhythm section. So
absolutely. So with and then the other thing about Fozzy too is, you know, you're not only Rich Ward, but you also got Billy Gray up there, man. Two unsung, unheralded guitar players in this business. I think you got two great ones right there.
Well, they're certainly not as sung as they should be, if that's the right way of putting it.
Right. I mean,
you know, it's really amazing. It's so much fun to play in a band with guys that are as good as they are. And Paulie, our bass player, Paul DeLeo, he's an amazing player too. I mean, he's got musical pedigree that, you know, that just, you know, way ahead, way beyond all of us. I'm actually really surprised he plays with us, you know, cause he's done a lot in this business. And, I mean, the band is just so much fun to play with, cause everybody is just so on their game. You know, it's a pleasure to walk on stage with guys like that and knowing, you know, it's going to be, we're going to play solid and we're going to play great and we're going to sound good. I mean, everybody has their off nights. You know, there's nights where you walk off stage and it's just like, you know, wow, we didn't quite seem to gel for some reason, you know, and there's all kinds of factors for that, but it's never been a situation where like we're getting ready to go on and it's like, oh boy, is so-and-so going to have one of those nights, you know, is so-and-so going to freak out? Is so-and-so just going to, and I've experienced that in other situations where
yes, you have.
I've experienced that in other situations where it's literally like I looking over to the side of the stage going, what are you doing? Are you even playing the same song? You know? And I remember you know, a very specific situation in more of just kind of like a cover band situation where we're playing a song. And literally I had to like look at the guitar player and kind of like stop and readjust what I was doing to adjust to him. Cause he was just like, it's like he was playing the song backwards and couldn't even hear that. It was like, he was playing the riff of the song backwards. And I had to literally like play a section in like 5/4 to catch up to him, you know, just to get back on the one again. And it's just, oh my God, what are you doing? And it's one of those kind of situations where somebody has spent their entire life kind of just in their bedroom learning how to play and didn't learn how to play with other musicians and learn how to gel with other people. And so to play with guys like Rich and Billy and Paulie, who, you know, have a wealth of experience playing with other people and playing in different situations. And we just know how to, you know, we just know how to come together, and everybody is, no one in the band is a virtuoso, you know, no one's ever, you know, neither Billy nor Rich is ever going to be mistaken for Yngwie Malmsteen, but it doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, because they're solid as concrete. And that's what I enjoy, is playing with guys who just have such a great grasp of who they are as a player and what they're doing.
Well,
so,
you know, what's funny about what you said about, you know, you walk off stage and you're like, man, nobody, you know, what were we doing up there? Nobody felt it, and it just felt off. But then, yeah, but then that's the show that people will walk up to you and be like, "Oh my God, that's the best Fozzy show I've ever seen."
Yeah, yeah, it's very strange how that works. Where sometimes, you know, the audience's perception is so different from yours, and yeah, that's happened a lot. I've had so many times where I walked off stage going, "Well, that wasn't quite as good as it could be," and other people are just, "Man, it's the best I've ever seen you," and I'm like, what show did you see? But you never let on, you don't, you know, right. You don't say, oh no, it wasn't any good. You just say, oh, thanks. Yeah. You know, and just roll with it.
Well, that's not the worst than the person that actually does do the, oh no, actually we sounded like shit tonight. And you know, our monitors weren't working properly and my guitar went out, and I'm like, that's not the show I saw. Like I was,
well, no one wants to hear that. You know, right. It's like, I know I wouldn't want to hear that if I went to see a band and I thought, man, what a great show. And I got a chance to tell them that I thought it was a great show. I don't want to hear them bitching about the monitors or, you know, or bitching about what a great, terrible show it was. Cause you know, it kills your buzz, you know, it's like, or makes you think, oh, well, you know, what's wrong with me? I thought it was great. So it's tempting to do that, you know, if people come up to you, and I've been guilty of it before, but the best thing to do is just say, oh, thank you, I appreciate that, you know, and keep your doubts to yourself.
So how are you enjoying being a part of the Shaved Head Club?
Mm. Well, it's a lot easier for one thing. I actually shaved my head a long time ago once, back in like 95. I used to, you know, I was coming out of the 80s into the 90s, and I had long hair just like everybody else. And I'd had long hair for a really long time, and I just got tired of it. And, you know, the trends were starting to trend towards guys having short hair. And I was like, you know, I've had long hair for so long, I want to cut it off and see what it's like to have short hair again. And I thought, well, I mean, I had hair down past my cut it all off, and I had never, and I shaved my head, and I had never done that before, and it was a really weird experience. I didn't dislike it, but I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm ready for this. So you know, having a shaved head is not something that's, you know, that new to me, but it's a weird experience. Like every time, I'm just used to getting used to being ready to get ready for a show and not having to worry about pull out the hair products and like spike my hair up,
right.
you know, and where's a mirror? It's like, oh, I don't need all that anymore. You know, it's just like, now I just, you know, put on my stage clothes and I'm ready to go. So yeah, I like it. I'm lucky that I've got, I don't have a funny shaped head, you know, I'm really lucky in that way. Cause some guys shave their head and it's like, ooh, not a good look, but, I've gotten a lot of compliments on it. So, yeah, so it's all good.
Yeah, I saw the pictures of it, man. It didn't look bad. I was like, all right, you can pull it off. Cause some, yeah, you're right, man. Sometimes people shave their head and you're like, whoa, grow the hair back.
Yeah. Or get a, you know, wear a hat or something. Have you shaved your head? Did you shave your head?
I've never shaved it completely yet, but I currently have it, buzzed right now.
Oh, okay. Okay. It's been a while since I've seen a picture of you. So I wasn't sure, you know, it's like we talk on the phone, but right. I haven't actually, like, I mean, the last time I saw you was when we were on that one tour, and and you came out and I saw you outside the venue. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. Did you have the short hair then or not? I'm sorry. I don't remember.
I just had a hat on. I think it might've been kind of long, but I had the hat on. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, I see guys with like long, you know, the long hair and I get, you know, like, oh man, I wish I could do that again, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. And actually speaking of that show, man, that was, you know, at the Trixie's here in town. And, mm-hmm. you know, I go to the shows there, you know, occasionally, and, I've seen good sized crowds there. I've seen small crowds. And, I was like, wow, when you guys came out, like the amount of people in that place, and that was last year, you know, mm-hmm. middle of last year, like Judas had just kind of started to hit. Yeah. And, man, the place went nuts. And I've never seen that many camera phones out. And it was a crazy atmosphere.
Yeah, it's trending that way, which is really nice, especially here in the States. You know, I mean, we've always had a little bit more, for whatever reason, of a struggle bringing people out in the States. And I like I said, I think that's indicative of a lot of bands. You know, in Europe, people tend to be a little bit more kind of faithful to music and their bands than they are here. And but maybe that's changing, you know, because there's a lot of festivals now. I think there's more festivals now than there were before. And Europe was always much more of a music festival culture. And I think America is becoming a little bit more like that now. And I think just kind of the music industry is sorting itself out. You know, it's been through a lot of turmoil. And I think there might be a trend more towards people going out to see live music again, which is great. So I'm not sure if it's just, you know, happening for us, maybe happening for people across the board, but whatever it is, I love it. You know, I mean, there's nothing more, satisfying than going on stage in front of, you know, a good crowd that's appreciating what you're doing. Doesn't even have to be a huge crowd, you know, just when it's just that feeling when you have a show and it's like, you know, not many people showed up. that's just never a good feeling.
No, never.
And we've certainly played, we've played a few places on the last tour that, we did not fill, but, we had a good enough crowd to make it seem worthwhile. Like, yeah, that's cool. That's respectable. You know, there's a lot of people who do that. They'll play like a 1,000 cap room. And, if 500 people show up, well, you know, you could look at it as, oh, well, we only sold out, you know, we only sold half the room. Or you could look at it as, damn, 500 people showed up to see us play, you know, and 500 people in a room that size is respectable, you know, and they can 500 people can make a lot of noise, you know. So to be able to, you know, do those kind of numbers, like and especially the second leg of our tour that's coming up, all the pre-sales are really strong. And one in particular, we're doing the Gramercy Theater in New York, which has always been one of my favorite places to play. It's just got a really cool vibe. It's like a 600 or 700 cap room. And it's just like a small theater and it's got a nice stage and, you know, with a good crowd in there, it's always, you know, it's a great vibe. But the last couple times we went through there, for whatever reason, our numbers weren't great. And they didn't want to give us a show. And we finally were able to negotiate a show. But it wasn't for a huge guarantee, but we wanted to play in New York. We've played the last several times we've played in that area. We've played in the New York area. We played like in, on Long Island or something like that, which is fine, but it'd been a while since we played in the city of Manhattan and we wanted to. And so we, you know, negotiated a deal, with them to do a show there, but, you know, not at the kind of guarantee that we're used to. I don't know if I should be talking that, you know, business like that. But anyway, but the pre-sales are really strong and it looks like we're going to sell it out. Hopefully if it's not sold out, it'll be damn close by the time we walk on stage, which is, you know, that's really gratifying when somebody didn't want to book you and you go, see, I told you, you know. So I'm looking forward to that show. And we're playing a couple House of Blues size places on the run coming up, which is always, you know, it's always nice. So it's just nice to play good places. And we got a lot of good places coming up and the pre-sales are really strong. So it's nice.
That's nice to be able to take a gamble on yourself like that and it pay off. I think Crowbar a few tours ago, they were playing smaller pub type places, you know, 200 cap pubs, and actually doing door deals because they maybe weren't getting what they wanted. So they were kind of betting on themselves, and actually ended up turning out to be a great tour for them. And then it ended up getting them on bigger tours after that because they were pulling good numbers. But
yeah,
so when you can gamble on yourself and it pays off, that's always a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. And there comes a time when you're trying to grow a band that you do have to take that chance. You do have to gamble on yourself. You know, you have to, you know, hang it out there a little bit and take the chance on booking rooms that might have been a little, you know, people think are too big for you. But you go, you know, we got to take the chance. Because if you just take the safe route and continue to book places that you know you can do well at, but, you know, the numbers are going to be small, no one will take you seriously, you know. And the way to get ahead in this business is to, you know, because people are always looking at the numbers. You know, the way you get guest spots on bigger tours with people, I mean, a lot of people think it's all just like friendships and like, you know, hey, come out on tour with us. And it may have been more like that at one time. But nowadays there are, you know, people in suits and ties looking at your numbers. You know, they're always looking at your numbers. And to be able to get on those bigger tours, you have to grow, and to grow, you have to take the chance on doing, you know, venues that normally you may think were too big for you, but you have to take the chance. And now is the time for us to do that. And so far it's paying off, which is really sweet.
Yeah. And with numbers too, these days you can, like, that's the name of the game. Like, you know, there are numbers for everything. And,
right.
And, you know, you can pull all the way down to, you know, you guys are gloating about your millions and millions of YouTube views, but you can probably go into those YouTube views and find out that, you know, how many came out of New York and how many came out of this certain city. And when you're booking a tour, you'd be like, you know, hey, Gramercy Theater, we've gotten 12,000 or 12 million views from New York alone. And, you know, those type numbers come into play.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of analytics that go along with things, and a lot of that is kind of beyond my grasp. But there's people out there who are always looking at those things. And you know, and I was talking the other day to somebody in the band, I can't remember who, but, you know, you also have to remember there's probably a lot of people who, when they know you're coming, they would be interested in coming to see you play, but they may see where you're playing and go, I don't want to go see them there. You know,
right.
I don't like that place. I mean, there are certain, you have that certain, you know, you have that certain demographic of people who are big enough fans who would probably come see you no matter where you played. But then there's that other demographic of fans who may have seen the video, heard your song on the radio, know you're coming, and think, huh, I'd like to go see that. And then they see you're playing at that place that they hate, and then they go, I'll skip it. You know, and so it's hard to know how many more people. Say if you're coming into some town and you know you can do about 500 people, and there's that one venue that you know is a 500 cap that you could sell out, but it's kind of a dive. And then there's the 1,000 cap room that's much nicer, you know, but you're only going to put 500 people in there. You never know how many, you know, how many more people might go, well, I'd go see them there because it has a little bit more of an event feeling about it. It's a way higher level than where we're playing, but Def Leppard and Journey are doing a tour right now. And from what I understand, they're booked to play here in Atlanta at SunTrust Park, which is the new baseball stadium. You know, it's a stadium.
Right.
And normally those bands play at Lakewood Amphitheater, which is the, you know, amphitheater in town, which is a 20,000 cap capacity place. And each band will do really well there, if not sell it out. You know, if Journey came and played Lakewood, they'd probably sell it out. Same with Def Leppard, you know. And so, but now they're touring together and they're playing a stadium where you could probably put 50,000 people in there for a concert.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, wow, man, that's a big risk because, okay, yeah, each of them on their own can do 20,000 people, but that doesn't necessarily mean that together they're going to do twice that, because a lot of the people who would pay to see Journey would also pay to see Def Leppard.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not like they're going to do 20,000 unique ticket buyers each, right? So that's a big risk, you know, to play a stadium like that. And I thought, you know, wow, I mean, how well are they going to do? Are they going to, you know, 20,000 people is, of course, you know, it's amazing to be able to draw that, but in a stadium that holds 50,000 or so, that could end up looking like a failure, you know?
Right.
So yeah. I was wondering about that, but then I thought, well, maybe the fact that it's in a big stadium makes it much more of an event and makes more people like curious to go see it. Like if either Journey or Def Leppard were playing at Lakewood, I wouldn't have a whole lot of incentive to spend the money to go see it. But to see them both and at like this big new stadium makes it much more of an event. It makes me like on a psychological level say, maybe I want to go be part of that,
right.
You know, because it's an event. So
yeah, plus if you haven't checked out the new ballpark either, that's another attraction to that. You know, you get to go and check out the new ball field and get to see two great bands.
Right, exactly. I mean, I know for myself, I'm much less incentivized to go see that package where they normally play than at someplace new that's this, you know, this big stadium that, you know, like is going to get the whole city buzzing that night when they're in town, that kind of thing. It's just like, people seem to have kind of that desire to be part of, you know, a big event. And so, you know, at our level playing a slightly bigger place, I don't know how, you know, how much that psychology would work either for us or any bands in that situation, but I would think it would at least draw a few more people, yeah. You know, and if it brings in an extra, you know, 50 more people than it normally would have, then maybe it's worth it to try to play a bigger place. Who knows?
Well, it's the same thing. On a psychological level, the place you guys played here was Trixie's. Trixie's is, mm-hmm. is a strip club. Like, you know,
right.
And I have friends that won't go to Trixie's unless it's
exactly.
like, because they don't want to deal with the hassle of arguing with their wife about going to the strip club to see a show. So
exactly.
I've always wondered what the amount of, you know, the damage of ticket sales that venue does just for that, you know, a person that may go see Fozzy at a normal venue, probably not going to go see Fozzy at a strip club, you know?
Yeah. And not only that, but we were doing a signing the other day while we were on the tour. And I asked somebody who was in line if they were coming to see the show, and they said they're not old enough. And I said, what do you mean? And apparently the venue we were playing, it was 21 and over, because it was a somewhat large venue, but it was also considered a bar. It wasn't big enough to not be considered a bar,
right?
Where they had, you know, they sold liquor and you had to be 21 to get in. And, you know, I certainly didn't like the fact that somebody wanted to come see us play, but couldn't because they weren't the right age. It's like, no, I don't, you know, and I remember asking Rich, why are we playing a, you know, a 21 and over place, you know, and he was just like, you know, that was the only place in town that we could have booked the show because every place else, you know, it's too big. If I understood correctly, because I'm not really privy to all that information, but still it's like, you know, it just sucks. You're playing somewhere and you know, somebody wants to come see you, but they can't because they're, you know, they're under 21, and that's much more likely to happen in a smaller place than a bigger place. So there's that element of it too. Yeah. So at some point, you know, I guess the overall point that we're trying to make is at some point you have to take the chance if you're going to grow, you know, you have to take the chance that you're going to fall on your face.
Absolutely, man. And I think you guys are definitely doing that.
Falling on our face.
No, taking the chance. Definitely not. Yeah. You guys are definitely not falling on your face. It's, you know, every time I turn around, you guys are doing something amazing and the Painless video looks great. And you know, so it's one of those things where I'm on the sidelines, like looking at my friends going, you know, that's amazing to see you guys doing that type of stuff. So yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. Well, I'm really grateful for everything that's going on.
And speaking of being grateful, I did see that looks like Vinnie Paul came out to a show the other day. Is that what I'm seeing in that photo?
Yeah. Yeah. He tries to come out to see us whenever we're in Dallas, which is really cool. He's a great guy. And we played at this place called Canton Hall in Dallas, which was a new venue, which was really, really, really nice venue. Cause it was it'd only been open a couple months, so it was brand new. And, it's kind of there's another venue right next to it. I can't remember the name of it. It's in Dallas and it's a really big place. It's like a 4,300 seat place. What's the name of it? I can't remember. Anyway, this place, Canton Hall, is kind of like its, little brother venue. So it holds like a little over 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you know, like a really nice place, nice big stage, great, you know, great lights, great PA. And, We had a really good show. We had a good turnout, and Vinny came out and brought some friends and hung out. And, you know, he usually does that when we're in Dallas, if he's not on the road. So, it's nice to get the support from guys like that, you know, from guys like Vinny. And, we had, the guitar player from Machine Head came out and jammed with us on stage, in San Francisco, along with, James Durbin. Mm-hmm. He sings for Quiet Riot, and he was on American Idol. He lives in Santa Cruz. So he came out, and there's video of them getting up on stage, and, we did TNT, and they jammed it with us. So it's always fun when your peers come, you know, and give you support.
So Chris Jericho is famous. You know, he's like, yeah, I've been around musicians my whole life, and they're still like just a level. Even the most famous musicians are still on an odd level, but like Chris is like famous. What's the, oddest thing to happen, maybe in an airport with him, or do you just see that, you know, him being like a little bit different than most famous people?
It's weird, because sometimes it's hard for me to separate, you know, that from just being Chris, the guy I'm in a band with, you
right.
know. You definitely, when you're out in public with him, you definitely see people, you know, like kind of like doing double takes and, you know, and tapping their friends on the shoulder and pointing, going, look, you know? And, so for the most part, I don't even really recognize it that much anymore. Cause I'm so used to it, you know? Mm-hmm. But there's times where like, I kind of get reminded about it. Like I remember, I've never been personally the biggest wrestling fan. I've had times where I was into it and aware of it, but it's not something that I really watch or pay attention to now. You know, just because I have other things that I'm interested in. I mean, for me, Chris is the guy in my band. You know, I don't really think of him any other way. And I remember he had a DVD come out that was like a three DVD set, you know, kind of a retrospective of his career. That we ended up getting copies of, because there was a big, there was a significant portion of it that they devoted to Fozzy. You know, they were talking about his life outside of wrestling, and they, you know, there was a lot of Fozzy footage and stuff like that. And so we got a copy of it, and I watched that because of course I wanted to see that, because it was, you know, something that interested me. Mm-hmm. But then I watched the rest of it, and I'd really just forgotten. I mean, I was aware of who Chris was before he, you know, we played in a band together, but it'd been a long time since I'd really much paid any attention to his wrestling career. And I'd really forgotten what that was all about. And first of all, I'd forgotten some of the amazing, like acrobatic stuff he does, you know, in the ring. And watching it, I was just like, holy crap. I can't, you know, it's like, that's the guy I'm playing in a band with. I just know him as Chris, you know?
Right.
And, I had really just forgotten, you know, that aspect of his life. And it was just kind of crazy to see that and be reminded of it, you know? So yeah, I mean, and sometimes, you know, certain people will show up at the gigs, you know, backstage that he's friends with. And I'm like, wow, you know, there's famous people here, you know? Yeah, so that's, you know, I'm always aware of that. But I just, it just kind of rolls off of me, because I'm just so focused on, you know, just my life. And, you know, I'm just kind of a normal guy, and everybody else in the band are just kind of normal guys. And when he's around us, you know, he's just a normal guy. So, you know, it's only kind of once in a while that you kind of snapped into that awareness of like, wow, he really is famous, isn't he?
Yeah, it's definitely it's got to be great. I mean, the I think I told the story in the last time that we talked. I'm not sure, it's been a while, but the one and only time my only interaction with Chris Jericho ever was you guys played in Louisville. God, this has been 5 years ago maybe or something. It's been a long time. And mm-hmm. You guys had an off show, and I walk in the backstage area with Billy. And I'm sitting there talking mm-hmm. to him, a little backstage room, small room. And you guys have a band meeting, and or a band meeting breaks out, you know, like, what happened tonight? Uh-huh. What do we need to work on? And I'm right. I'm the only non-Fozzy member in the room. And Chris, right. And so I look over, and Chris Jericho looks at me, and he's just like, can you give us a minute? And he like kind of like pointed at the door, and his muscles and everything else shot out at me. And I'm like, oh, I'm not supposed to be here right now. And, I walked out and
well, I have to say that kind of thing is fairly unusual. You know, I mean, there are times where You know, we have to discuss something as a band, and if there's anybody kind of around, it'll be like, hey, you know, do you mind giving us some privacy for a minute? And that, I think that happens.
And I, yeah, much. I don't, I didn't take it as anything other than I understood every moment. You know what I'm saying? Like I got it. It wasn't like, fuck that guy. It was like, oh yeah, they're having a band meeting. I shouldn't have even been there, but yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't even click.
You just get that kind of, oops, I'm sorry. Let me,
my bad, Mr. Chris Jericho.
And I've been in those situations before too, you know, like touring with other people, you know, and it's like, I'm just hanging around like normal. And all of a sudden somebody looks at you and goes, can you give us a minute? And you look around and realize like, oh, I'm the only, like, I'm the only person who's outside their circle standing here. Yeah. Excuse me. And I'll just dip out for a minute. So yeah, that's funny.
It's good stuff, man. Who is just randomly someone that's been backstage? You're like, oh shit, that is a famous person.
Well, just recently, I just met James Durbin, who came out to see us in San Francisco, like I was saying, and he was a really nice guy and just real normal, you know, down to earth. And I'd heard his name, and I'd heard Chris, he's buddies with Chris, so I'd heard him talking about him before, and. You know, he was one of the top guys on his season of American Idol. And, you know, so he's been, you know, in the limelight. And, you know, he was just kind of some dude hanging out after our show. And I chatted with him. He's a nice guy. And I kind of looked him up after that because I didn't really know a lot about him. I just knew the name. And, you know, just like you Google him and it was like, wow, this guy's, you know, this guy's got some notoriety, you know, it's like. It's just weird to, you know, somebody you're just kind of talking to backstage and then you look them up on Google and it's like, wow, I was just talking to a famous person. yeah, that's kind of an odd feeling. I'm trying to think if there's anybody that like, I was actually like starstruck by, you know, cause I haven't met, like, you know, cause Chris is, you know, he's hung out with a lot of like really famous people, you know, like he's buddies with Paul Stanley now, you know,
because
Paul Stanley was one of those guys he always admired and wanted to get on his podcast and this, that, and the other. And, you know, just through one thing or another, now they've actually become friends and they've, you know, they text back and forth and stuff like that. And when we were in just recently playing at the Whiskey in Hollywood, he, of course, texted Paul and was like, you know, hey, man, if you like, come out to the show, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he said that Paul texted back, yeah, sounds good. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm getting, you know, Paul Stanley's like one of my idols from when I was 10, you know, and I'm going to get to play for him, you know, but as it turns out, he didn't make it to the show. But like, if he had been backstage, I would have been, you know, pretty starstruck, you know, and like, you know, not sure what to say and really kind of like feeling like a dummy. Who showed up at that Whiskey show? I mean, the last time we played the Whiskey, Chad Smith from the Chili Peppers came out. Yeah, that was amazing. I got a picture with him, you know, put it on Facebook, of course. That was incredible to have him come out to the show. He's on tour right now. He probably would have come out, if he hadn't been on tour, but the Chili Peppers out on tour. Got people like that, you know, I mean, it's like, we've never had like, you know, Tom Cruise has never just strolled backstage at one of our shows or anything like that. So
a lot of the wrestling guys come out.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, you know, some of them came out at the show in Hollywood, a couple of them. But a lot of those guys, and in Phoenix, a couple of his wrestling buddies came out who are probably like in that world really famous. But I don't really know that world. So they just look like these, you know, big guys to me. You know, like he'll introduce them here. Here's so and so. Here's so and so. I'm like, oh, hey, nice to meet you, man. Thanks for coming out and this, that, and the other. And I don't know who they are. That reminds me, though, of a funny story.
All right.
You know, Paulie, our bass player, he plays with Nana in Europe, who, if you're not familiar with who Nana is, she had a hit in the 80s, 99 Red Balloons.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, you know who that is. I mean, that was like her one big hit in the U.S., so she's not really that famous in the U.S., but, you know, overseas, she's a big star. I mean, overseas, she plays arenas and she's like one of the judges on like Germany's version of The Voice and stuff like that. She's a big star and he plays in her band. And he's also, he played with Billy Joel. He's played with a lot of people. In fact, we were watching footage of him on stage at Madison Square Garden playing bass for Billy Joel back in the 90s. So he's met a lot of famous people. And but he's a real salt of the earth guy. He's from New Jersey. He's just Paulie D, right? You know, hey, how you doing? I'm Paulie D. And he was telling a story about in Germany playing a show with Nena, and like Germany has a chancellor and a president, you know, which is like apparently their political structure. I don't know that the president of Germany holds the same power that ours does, but still an pretty important person, you know, a VIP. And apparently the president of Germany came out to see Nena play. And the first person, when his security was walking him backstage to like meet Nena and the band and everything, the first person they came across was Paulie. And Paulie treats everybody the same, you know, it's like, and so apparently he stuck out his hand and was like, you know, in broken English, "Nice to meet you. My name is so-and-so. I'm the president of Germany." And Paul was like, "Hey, I'm nice to meet you. I'm Paulie D from New Jersey."
That's great.
And I guess it's funnier if you know Paul and you can imagine how he sounded. "Hey, I'm Paulie D. How you doing?"
"How you doing?"
Yeah, it's like that. I mean, he talks like, "Hey, how you doing? Yeah, I'm Paulie D. How you doing?" So, yeah, so that was just kind of a funny story. Here's this dignified, you know, or supposedly dignified politician that, mm-hmm. you know, holds this great position of power in this country. "How are you?" "Oh, I'm fine. I'm Paulie D. How you doing?" So that was funny. He's probably met more famous people than all of us, though.
That's crazy. I know you're into politics. Don't want to get too much into it, but how are you seeing, you know, this president and everything else when you go overseas? How are they? How are people responding to Americans and to you?
Well, I mean, you know, I haven't noticed any difference in the way people respond to me or any of the guys in the band or any of the people we hang around. You know, it's always kind of the same. You know, it's just politics doesn't really enter into it. And to be honest with you, ever since the election, I've just kind of stopped paying attention to, you know, like the daily news type of politics. I've become much more interested in like, you know, like the long form interview on YouTube, you know. Mm-hmm. So kind of the news and events of the day kind of escape me. I don't really care about them as much. It's just like I listen to people's you know, like overarching philosophy, you know, like how they view the world and how they view, you know, I guess kind of the what goes behind politics, you know, like how things should be, you know, what should you know, what laws should be, what laws shouldn't be, and this, that, and the other. I listen to a lot of, there's this guy, Jordan Peterson, who a lot of people have discovered on YouTube, who's a psychology professor who's become very famous for his lectures and his viewpoints. And I actually discovered him a little over a year ago before he became really famous. And it's kind of like, you know, he's become this big media figure. And I was like, yeah, I discovered him over a year ago. And so yeah, I'm much more interested in kind of like the podcasty world of YouTube than the actual news. You know, I used to keep it on the news like all the time in the house. Now I don't even really watch the news because the format to me has just become dated. You know, it's like you have an opinion show and you have the host kind of mediating a debate between two people that lasts for 5 minutes before they say, "Well, we have to move on," or "We have to go." You know, and it always devolves into more of an argument than anything else because, you know, people want to be able to express their opinion about something. And a few minutes in that forum, you know, unless you just want to spout platitudes, is really not a sufficient way to explain your point of view. You know, mm-hmm. I've started listening to like I really enjoy Joe Rogan's podcast, even though, you know, not necessarily for him as much as the people he has on it. And some people he has on, I have no interest in, but he has other people on who are really interested in hearing, and his podcast will last for 3 hours, you know?
Yeah.
And it gives you a lot more of a chance to kind of understand somebody's point of view and what they're saying. when you're in a long form like that, where you're not always up against a commercial break, you know, or something like that. So that's something I've become a lot more interested in these days than just like the mainstream media and the news. So the more I learn about those type of things, the more I learn, the more I realize I have more to learn. So I've used to be a lot, I used to express my opinion about things a lot more readily than I do now, because, you know, the more I listen to people who are really, I regard as really intelligent and have a really intelligent point of view about the world, the more I've realized I've got to learn,
right.
You know, so I'm a lot less inclined to give my opinion on things, because it's like, what do I know? You know? So I'm a lot more eager to like to listen than I used to be. So I don't talk about it as much anymore, just because I feel like, you know, I can't really formulate my opinions, because there's so much more to learn about so many things, you know? I'm probably not quite as political as I used to be.
Right.
I always like to discuss things, but I'm a little bit more leery about jumping into discussions as I used to be, because there's been so many times I've felt like I've gotten into discussion with somebody about any kind of particular thing, and for some reason the like at work or something like that, and the discussion wasn't able to continue because of whatever reason. And I feel like, man, I didn't really articulate myself very well. You know, I really don't feel like I expressed myself very well. And I don't like that. I don't like feeling misunderstood. I don't like the feeling that somebody thinks I think something that I don't, you know?
Right. Right.
So I'm a little bit more cautious about, you know, that sort of thing. And I'm a little bit more inclined to just like listen and digest what somebody else has to say than to just jump right in and give my opinion. Although, you know, sometimes somebody will say something that I think is just like, doesn't make any sense at all. And I'm tempted to go there, but I try to have a little bit more restraint than I used to.
Yeah, it's definitely the whole politics world is definitely something I like to try to stay away from, especially on the show. And mm-hmm. I don't know, man. It's just I don't think anybody's right when you get down to the end of it. But
and it's like what we're talking about now. I mean, if you wanted to devote a whole episode to it, I would be glad to. But if, you know, when it's just kind of one aspect of a conversation we're having about any number of subjects, it's like, well, I feel like I can't really explain myself well, so I'll probably just shy away from it.
I got you.
But if you ever wanted to talk about it, you know, on full length, I would be glad to.
Very cool, man. We're coming up on our hour. Couple last questions for you. Sure. You guys did some Stuck Mojo stuff a couple of years ago, and you know, was that last year? I guess, or was that 2 years ago? My brain's all mushed together.
I think it's closing in on a year since we did our last show. Yeah.
So you did the Stuck Mojo stuff a year ago, and are there plans to do any more Mojo stuff, or are you guys all in on Fozzy?
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm pretty sure that Rich would like to do some more, but we are really busy with Fozzy right now. So I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen. I mean, I love playing that music, you know, and I hope we do. I hope we do some more, but I really can't say whether that'll happen or not, just because we're so busy with what's going on with Fozzy right now. I mean, the Fozzy record's only been out for about 5 months. We're only about 5 months into an album cycle, and the new single just came out, and we're getting a lot of offers for touring and stuff like that. So I really don't know. I hope so, but it's not up to me.
Didn't Bones come out to a show recently? Seems like I saw some recent photos of at least him and Rich, or him and you. I can't remember.
Yeah. We did a festival up in Wisconsin, and he came out. We didn't see much of him. We just kind of, you know, he was just kind of there, and we saw him and said hi, and, you know, took a couple photos and, you know, and everything. But we weren't there very long. It was just kind of one of those, you know, get in there, you know, do our show, and now we got to be on our way. So we didn't even get to like hang out for the whole festival. Cause I believe we had like a really long drive. So it was just kind of like, oh, hey man, good to see you, but we got to go.
That's always the worst. And, you know, the future Fozzy, right now, it looks like you're about to, you're on a quick little break right now, and then you start your tour back up soon. Are you back home in Atlanta right now?
Yeah, I'm at home. We got home. I got home Saturday night, and I've just been enjoying some time with the family, and we'll be going back out. The tour restarts on the 27th, and then after that, we have some we have a little run of festivals at the end of this month, and then we're just we're continuing to put stuff on the calendar. So we'll have a little bit of a break, like May, and I think June. Then towards the end of June, we'll be ramping things back up again. And then after that, we should stay pretty busy through the end of the year.
Are you guys touring more where it's, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 weeks on, taking a couple of weeks off, and then going back out? Are you guys, does that seem to be the formula of tours these days?
That's the way it's shaping up. And I like it that way because, you know, as much as I love to play and, you know, and tour and everything, I do have a family that, you know, is at home that I don't like to be away from. So it's sometimes it can be kind of hard to find the balance between staying busy because you need to stay busy to keep the band out there and keep the machine rolling. But, you know, when you've got a 3-year-old son at home and a wife, you don't want to be away for, you know, months at a time. So the whole kind of out for 3 weeks, home for a week, you know, kind of dynamic works for me. Mm-hmm. And I hope we can keep that up. It looks like we're looking at a fall tour of the United States. It's going to be a more along the 5 week, 5 week range. But it being away from home in the States is a lot easier for me. Because it's just kind of psychologically knowing that if for any reason I had to get home in some sort of emergency or something, that it wouldn't take much to get home, you know? Right. So I don't feel when I'm in the States, I don't feel as disconnected as when we're in Europe or especially something like Australia where, you know, say if you got the news, like, you know, your son is sick, you need to come home. It's like, I'm in Australia, you know, it's like, you know, that's not easy. Whereas if I'm in, you know, if I'm in Kansas or something, you know, I could be home in a few hours. Whereas when you're in Australia, it's not that easy. So being out on tour for 5 weeks in the States is a little bit easier to take just because I don't feel as disconnected.
And you've also been doing a ton of, YouTube stuff, drum stuff, doing a lot of drum cams from live shows. What's the best place for people to find those?
Well, my YouTube channel, if you just go to YouTube and type in Frank Plays Drums, one word, I have a YouTube channel that'll come up, and that's mostly got older stuff on it right now. I'm working on updating all that. We just did a show in El Paso that I got a good drum cam video from that I just posted on there. And, I just got a new kit from D Drum through my deal with D Drum, and I'm going to be posting about that soon. Unfortunately, I'm not able to use the new kit on this second leg of this tour coming up because, you know, our gear is already out in the, you know, in the trailer on the bus waiting for us to return. So we're flying back out to our next date. You know, you can't really, you know, put a drum kit in the overhead bin. So, but I'll be debuting that kit when we do these festivals at the end of April, and I'll be posting about that a lot. And that's been my one kind of Achilles heel is I'm not a good social media guy. So I need to get better at that. And I'm hoping to be posting a lot more stuff under the name Frank Plays Drums. So if anybody wants to see any of the stuff that's out there, just go to YouTube, Frank Plays Drums, and you should be able to find it pretty easily.
Cool, man. Let's finish this off with a song off of Judas. What song would you like to play?
Why don't we play Painless? That's the new single.
All right. Painless it is. And Frank, man, it's been great to talk to you and great success. Great watching all of your successes, and hope it keeps going for you, man.
Thanks, man. Same to you. I hope the podcast keeps growing for you. And, you know, we'll do it again.
Trapped in between a whisper and a scream, a scream.
right, again, thank you to Frank Fonseri of Fozzy for coming on the podcast. And thanks to John from John's Untitled Podcast for coming on, man. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I mean, this is basically a Fozzy week for both of us.
Yeah, you had a really good interview with Billy for a couple of days ago. Billy Gray, one of my favorite people ever. And so, yeah, Fozzy week at the Talk To Me and John's Untitled Podcast.
And I guess I didn't say this on my thing, but I just want to say thanks to you for setting that chat up for me. I know apparently I forgot to actually mention that that you set it up, but officially on your podcast, you set that up for me, and thank you very much. I know it was a really good time for me talking with Billy, and I think there was a lot of cool things said in there.
Yeah, Billy's a great guy, man. One of my favorite people ever. And like I told you, I think later on, I think I've known that guy since like roughly 1998 when he came through. And he had a band called Method 51, came through town a couple of times. I saw him. And yeah, man, what a great dude. What a great guitar player. And yeah, man. So yeah, make sure to run over to John's Untitled Podcast. Check that out. What's the best way for them to find you, John?
For me personally, just Facebook, John's Untitled Podcast on Facebook. And if anyone wants to reach out to me and tell me that I suck, you can find me on my email at johnsuntitledpod@gmail.com. I mean, you already went over the whole thing about John Drake, how someone reached out to me thinking I was John Drake on Twitter.
That was great. I forgot about that. Yeah, you were getting a ton of hate mail, and they thought you were John Drake. But yeah, that's funny.
I never got an apology, so whoever, either that dude or John Drake needs to apologize on behalf of that dude for making me feel like shit for like 20 minutes until I figured it out that he had the wrong John.
That's fantastic. All right, and thanks again. Once again, like I said, Frank Fonseray, also to the ladies over at Buckle Up for Chi and Good Company with Bowling, all of our fine friends, and make sure you're checking out MetalNexus.net for all your metal needs. So yeah, for the Talk To Me podcast, I am Joshua Toomey. That's been John, and I will talk to you next Thursday.